Thank you for your rapt attention. So I'm Yasmina Zaidman. I'm with Acumen Fund. And just set this down. You know, I think what we're starting to see really clearly is the complexity of the issues of water, and particularly water and agriculture. So what I'm sort of thinking about as I talk about my presentation is how to contextualize Acumen Fund within all the different kinds of things we're hearing, from policy questions. I think we'll be hearing from someone from the private sector later. And, of course, there's a lot of NGOs doing work in this space, whether it's research or trying to provide solutions. Acumen Fund is kind of unique in its attempt to fill a niche between the public sector in terms of looking at public goods and also the private sector in terms of looking at capital and sources of capital. So I'll try to paint a picture of what we do and then focus in on our work, particularly in the area of agriculture. We are a nonprofit venture fund that invests in businesses that provide critical goods and services to the poor. There's some sort of conflicting ideas there. We are basically a nonprofit that works with philanthropic capital to invest in businesses that are solving social problems. We use philanthropic capital because it gives us the flexibility as investors to invest in businesses that are really focusing on the needs of the poor, often in emerging markets where the investment environment is much riskier and most investors really steer clear either of emerging markets altogether or specifically of entrepreneurs that serve low-income consumers. So to date, we've invested about $40 million in 30 different companies. We're looking at health, water, housing, and energy as areas for investment. We not only provide capital, but also focus on the need for management support to help scale businesses that can meet the needs of the poor in innovative ways. We do that by providing management support for our own team, but we also have fellows that we place with these companies, and we've placed about 26 fellows with the companies that we invest in. And then finally, from these investments, we hope to see social impact as these companies scale and reach significant numbers of customers. We hope to see them reach 1 million customers within a 5-year period. We also see financial sustainability and companies that are able to go to private capital markets to get growth capital. And we also see lessons learned, which brings me to why I'm here today, because I wanted to share some of what we've learned from the businesses that we've invested in, particularly related to drip irrigation. I'm going to look at Pakistan and India as two countries where we've worked. You've just heard, I think, a lot about the challenges around agricultural use of water, the dependence of not only general population but particularly the poor on agriculture as a source of their livelihoods. And this is particularly true, I think, in South Asia where a lot of our investing has been done. We see drip irrigation, which was mentioned earlier by Jason Clay, as a real potential solution. Drip irrigation can allow people to use their scarce water resources more efficiently. I think there's a mistake sometimes in thinking that irrigation can reduce water use. I think that in some cases it can, but what we've seen is that farmers need to use the water they have to increase their output. They're not necessarily going to cut in half the amount of water they use. They'll probably use the same amount of water but increase their productivity. It also reduces labor and soil erosion, which we've already heard is a huge issue in terms of spending the principal when it comes to the assets that smallholder farmers have to work with. We identified a technology in 2003 in India that had been developed by an organization called International Development Enterprises India, which is a sister organization to International Development Enterprises. They had been working for around 7 years to refine a technology that does drip irrigation but at a very low cost. And they had developed some insights about how to create a product that would really be attractive to farmers who earn, on average, less than a dollar a day. That was their target market. There are certainly many farmers in India who make more than that, but they wanted to focus on those who were living below the poverty line. And what they found was that those farmers needed to have a product that would give them a return on their investment within 1 year, that they were not in a position to make a longer-term investment, and they didn't want to force farmers to borrow money to buy this product because farmers, I think, had already experienced a lot of negative downsides to borrowing for their inputs. And if you want to track incidents of drought in parts of India, what you often see is a huge increase in farmer suicides when farmers are unable to pay the people that they owe money to when their crops fail. So this was a cycle that they didn't want to have anything to do with. They wanted a one-year return on investment. They wanted a technology that could be miniaturized so that farmers, even with a quarter acre, could make their first investment in the technology and then scale up either as they had more land or they had access to more resources to buy inputs. The product increases yields by 30% and also allows farmers to have multiple crops in a year. So instead of doing one crop when the rains fall, they could do three crops using their water resources more carefully. So this seemed like a real win. We saw an opportunity to work with them to help them build this business model and at the same time move them towards a more commercial model where they themselves as an organization could become financially sustainable. As a nonprofit, they had been focusing on designing this product and building market demand for it, but they were still, the margins in this whole sales cycle were going to the manufacturers and the distributors, and they themselves were subsidized through grants. We thought about how their model could scale if they actually could make their own operations sustainable. And so we worked with them over a period of time to build a for-profit company that is now selling these systems much more widely. At the same time, we started working with a group in Pakistan called the Tar Rural Development Program. And they were working with a network of thousands of villages through some of the most arid parts of Pakistan. And they saw a real opportunity to work with this same product. So we worked with the two of them to do a technology transfer. And it's a really nice phrase and it sounds really easy, but the reality is that getting two organizations in two geographies that have been some level of conflict for many, many years now was very tough. Even just getting visas to get people from one organization to visit the other was really challenging. And it took 2 years for that relationship to really develop, to allow them to spend time face to face to do site visits, to actually see how drip irrigation was working in India. But eventually what we saw was that the two organizations were really inspired by each other and found an opportunity to partner. Within that period of time, both of them launched for-profit companies, and we were able to invest $1.5 million in the two companies. $500,000 of debt and equity went into the company in Pakistan to build up their business, and $1 million went into the for-profit company launched by ID India, which is called Global Easy Water Products. And we saw this as a real milestone in terms of bringing a product that was really designed for the poorest farmers into a more commercial landscape. The impact in India and Pakistan has been tremendous. GEWP was really building on the success of ID India, and they've sold over the sort of transition from those two organizations 250,000 systems, benefiting about 1.2 million people. The pilots in Pakistan by MicroDrip, which is their for-profit company, have been successful, and they're in the process of scaling up. We've also learned a lot about what it takes to be successful. One is around design innovation, that the drip irrigation has been around for a long time, but it was really designed for a different market of much larger farms, more high-value cash crops, people who basically could invest $1,200 or $2,000 an acre to develop these automated, efficient systems. But looking at the dollar-a-day farmer required a real sort of shift in how you think about the product, and both of these organizations we selected because of their ability to listen to the poor and to really see them as customers, and their willingness to continually innovate. And so they've made changes to the product since we've known them. They continue to add new products to their portfolio to really respond to the needs of small-scale farmers. We've also been, I think, perpetually impressed and amazed by the depth of understanding and knowledge of these farmers who are willing to make an investment when it makes sense for them and have a real nuanced understanding of the different trade-offs that they have to make when it comes to, you know, where to take risks, where to invest, and how to manage the resources that they have. The other thing that we've seen for both companies is the importance of building distribution networks and the time that it takes to do that. So technology is really not the fix. Most of these product designs can very easily be reverse engineered. You can look at them and figure out how to make them. What makes these companies unique and successful is that they are building the infrastructure for distribution and marketing that can take years to build. And it also requires patience, I think, on the part of investors or donors to allow that infrastructure for distribution to develop. I mention aggregating markets because one thing we've seen is the potential to aggregate markets by working with organizations that pool different groups of smallholder farmers, whether it's the supply chain for sugarcane for Coca-Cola or organizations that do fair trade. All of them are working with networks of farmers, and if you can build a supply chain using that existing infrastructure, it can really save a lot of time and resources. I also wanted to touch briefly on the point of subsidies, because I think there's sort of an underlying assumption that in order to accelerate the development of these technologies and their wide distribution to people who need them, there may be a need for subsidies. We've seen subsidies both help to expand access to these products. We've also seen them hurt. And so I just want to bring that up, and hopefully we can have more of a discussion on it later. Where we've seen subsidies hurt is when they benefit particular manufacturers who often have more expensive products and maybe better resources to work with the government and sort of create an arrangement where they can get subsidies. Even if the subsidy goes to the customer, it can easily benefit one company. That makes it harder for entrepreneurs who are maybe offering a more competitive product, and that's been a challenge, I think, for both of these companies. The other issue we've seen is that the farmers who need the subsidies the most often have the hardest time accessing them. They may not have the means, the connections, the ability to go to a city hall, fill out the right forms in order to get access. And there's a waiting time to get refunded for their investments in drip irrigation. So the whole system seems like it doesn't really focus on the needs of the poorest, which sort of raises the question of why are these subsidies being used in this way? The question that we've sort of thought to ourselves is, where is the right place for subsidies? And as we're thinking about the use of whether it's donated dollars or invested dollars, how do you use those in the right way? As I look at the whole supply chain, from R&D for the product, manufacturing, wholesale distribution to networks of distributors, and then retail distribution, marketing and sales, and then the purchase and after-sales service, there's two key places where we've seen grants and subsidies play a really key role in accelerating the marketplace. One is in R&D, which again is a process that takes time to be able to refine a product, test it out, and that's an area where if you have support early on, you have an opportunity to innovate, take risks, try things out without having the pressure of the market forcing you to cut that process short. We've also seen around marketing and sales, the work to educate consumers, to provide pilots, to demonstrate how a product is used. Again, it can take time, and it's hard to recover those costs. Where we've seen that subsidies aren't necessarily needed is for manufacturers. Once that market demand is there, we've seen them jumping into the fray to start to create these products. We've also seen it possible for distributors to immediately start to get a margin and not require that subsidy. So these are some lessons that we've taken away from the work. To sort of paint a more vivid picture of what this means, this is one of the families in Pakistan that got access to this technology about a year and a half ago. And this is, very typical family living in the Tar region. It's very arid. They have about one season in which to grow crops, and the rest of the year they actually leave their homes so that they can make money elsewhere. When they got access to drip irrigation, they were able to do a bumper crop of sunflowers and earn enough to stay home, not have to leave and migrate to the city. They were able to send their children to school for the first time, and they're firm believers that this is a product that will continue to move them out of poverty. Our founder, Jacqueline Novogratz, visited this farmer and had a chance to ask him what this meant in his life. And his proudest, I think the biggest change for him and the thing that he was proudest of was that he was able to send his daughters to school. And she said, "Why is that so important to you?" And he said, "If my daughters go to school, they will learn tolerance. And that's what we need now." And to hear that from someone living in Pakistan, where, depending on where you are, there's conflict still between different ethnic groups, religious groups, border areas, that this is how people see themselves moving out of poverty, being able to fulfill their aspirations, that is for us the biggest takeaway, and the value of seeing the poor not as beneficiaries, sort of an anonymous mass, but really as individuals who are aspiring to improve their own lives. And it's why we work with entrepreneurs that see them the same way and try to serve their needs to the best of their abilities. Thank you.